Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Young Lads Podcast, episode 30 of this Young Lads Podcast. Harris Eisenberg joining me, as always. I am Peter DeFee Jr. A little bit of a slow week last week and just a little bit of bad time management on my part, so we couldn't really have an episode last week. Really, nothing's been going on in baseball. The last couple of weeks, we're just kind of gearing up for college baseball, which we'll talk a little bit about today, as my cat tried to jump in front of my computer.
That's a vicious like cats, always. My friend.
You know, I got some animals that just don't know personal space. But anyways, a little bit of baseball news, or some, I should say, MLB news. Last week, Jose Altuve signed a 5-year, $125 million contract extension. That'll keep him with the Astros through the 2031 season. He will most likely retire with the team. He's been with the team since 2011, so it'll be 20 years that he's with the Astros. And then also, Bobby Witt Jr., I don't know if we touched on this when he signed it. I think we might have, but just in case we didn't. He signed an 11-year, $288.7 million contract extension, including opt-outs and club options. And with those three club options at the end of it, it could total to 14 years and $377.7 million. So I assume at the end of those 11 years, he might be into that 34, 35 years. So it's kind of just a way of, you know, if he's playing well, maybe take one of those club options. But if he's not, you really only spent $288 million on what a lot of people think is going to be the next, you know, shortstop face of Major League Baseball. I mean, he had a really good year last year. Went 30 for 30 with stolen bases and home runs. But right now, he's just on a Royals team that, what are they going to do with Salvador Perez? Jacob Junis right now looks like they're number one. They got Zach Greinke back for probably his last year. Hopefully his last year. I don't think anybody needs to see him pitch 150 innings again and have an ERA of over 5. Unless you want to see him, Harris. Do that.
I've seen him enough. I've heard enough grunting. I'm actually shocked that he's back, considering, I mean, he went out pretty good at the end of last season. He threw some good ball against the Yankees, but yeah, I'm actually really surprised that he's back. I think if you wanted to continue, but I'll just add something on the whole Bobby Witt thing. Like, this is a big thing for the Royals to have a commitment like this, because this is a Royals team that, since they won the World Series in 2015, has not been very good. And not even close to good. And it's kind of like we've been waiting. Like, they've had some good players. Like, Jorge Soler came into town that one year and hit 40 homers. Salvador Perez, you know, came in a couple years ago. He hit 40 homers as well and got himself some MVP votes. But also, Salvador Perez is on the wrong side of 30 here. And you know, Alex Gordon is retired. This is a team that's, like, you don't know what's going on with them. And also, just organization-wise, you know, we don't even know where they're going to be playing, because, you know, the ballpark situation, too, with Kauffman. So, I mean, to get a commitment like this, it's like, I mean, I guess people love playing in Kansas City, right? It's like Patrick Mahomes signs a big deal. You know, he takes ownership of the Kansas City Royals, and now he's been able to dish all this money to Bobby Witt Jr. I think it's a great commitment, because I know a lot of people were saying, oh, they're just going to end up trading this guy at some point, you know, down the line. But this is a big deal for the Royals. I mean, this is the guy that they're building around, as they should. He's a stud player. And, you know, I got a good look at their farm system this past season. They got some solid players in the minor league system. Nobody that really catches your eye, but they just have some solid ball players. Well, one of the guys, Blake Mitchell, he's a rookie ball right now. He's a 7th-ranked catching prospect in all of baseball, and that's, you got to think about the list of who he's behind. He's behind guys who are all first-round picks. Look, the Royals just need something positive, right? Bobby Witt's really the guy, and that's it. So it'll be interesting to see, like, if he opts out in the middle of this deal, do they trade him in the middle of this deal? The Royals just have to become good at some point. It's been a long time.
Yeah, you mentioned since 2015 they've been pretty bad. The year after 2016, they went 81-81. That is the only time they finished 500 or better. The closest was 2017, where they were 80-82, and then again 2021, they were 74-88. But since winning the World Series, they've lost 103 games or more 3 times. They finished 4th or worse Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years in a row, including back-to-back years of finishing fifth, and really an AL Central that's weak and has been for a really long time. I don't remember who, I don't remember what the winning record for the division was last year, 87-75, which, if you think about it, is fourth in the AL East. It was also fourth in the AL West, and those are two really good divisions. And then the AL East just got really good, or it got a lot better this year with Baltimore adding Corbin Burns and the Yankees adding Juan Soto. So I will say this, they did take advantage of that small window that they had. When they had Lorenzo Cain, they had Alex Gordon, Salvador Perez was just coming up. They had some young pitching. They had a really good back end of the bullpen with Kelvin Herrera, Greg Holland, and Wade Davis. That was basically a three-headed monster. They also had Mike Moustakas and Ben Zobrist as kind of like these veteran leaders. But after, other than that, it's just there's been no direction with this Royals team. I think they're trying to go for a rebuild, but it hasn't worked out these last couple of years. And now you have guys with contracts hanging over their head like Salvador Perez. Like, what are you going to do with him? Is he going to be there, you know, for this rebuild? Because you're trying to get MJ Melendez to be your next catcher, but a lot of the analytics and everything and a lot of the big names of baseball don't think he's going to be a catcher. They think he's going to be more of a first baseman. So those are two guys that, you know, are they going to be around? And now Bobby Witt Jr., you said it best. Is he going to get traded in the middle of this deal to where, okay, the Royals then have to reset once again? I mean, you got to think, since the Astros were able to rebuild from 2011 to 2015 and finally get in the postseason, that's been the last team that one of these long rebuilds has worked for. Because if you think about it, maybe the Orioles now, but this is only the one time that they've been in the playoffs. They have to sustain it for a long period of time. The Astros are the only team that's been able to rebuild, win a World Series, and then also sustain that success and keep that window open. Because right now, if you said that the Astros window was closing, I think 9 out of 10 people would say, no, it's not. You know, it's still open, and it could stay open depending on what they do with Yordan Alvarez, what they do with Alex Bregman. Jose Altuve is going to stay there for a long time now. You have Jeremy Peña as your shortstop of the future. You know, Mauricio Dubon in center field for you. So you got young guys like Hunter Brown and Christian Javier to be your starters. So that window stayed open, and that's the last team that I can really think of that's rebuilt and stayed successful.
I think one of the big things is that you try and compare the Royals to one of those teams that is rebuilt. So I'll throw another Texas team in there. The Texas Rangers did a similar thing too, where 2016 was the last time they made the playoffs before this year when they won the World Series, and they went full, you know, teardown mode. I mean, look at the guys that they got rid of / you know, walked away. Adrian Beltre ended up retiring in 2018. They traded Joey Gallo. You know, Elvis Andrews, they finally parted ways with, all in that little span, and they were still able to be relevant and, you know, go out and win a World Series. But I think the biggest difference is you look at Houston and Texas and compare them to the Royals. Going to Texas is a very desirable destination. I mean, not many people are calling their agent and saying, hey, I want to go to Kansas City. You know, even the year the Royals won the World Series, like, if you were a free agent after the 2014 season, right? Think about that class. I mean, you can't really think of it off the top of your head, but was there a big free agent that said, hey, the Royals just made the World Series, let me go sign in Kansas City and help them win the World Series the next year? The answer is no, because they had the same core. All they did was traded for Ben Zobrist in the middle of the year, and he ended up, I believe, wasn't Ben Zobrist like the World Series MVP or something that year?
He was that year.
Yeah, and he was with the Royals for half a season. So, you know, somehow you got to make Kansas City a desirable destination. Just not, but I think it helps that Bobby Witt Jr., you know, took a bag, and, you know, maybe that kid can make it a desirable destination. I don't know, but I think the team does need some direction first, you're right. Matt Cotrarro's the manager. Obviously did some good stuff with the Rays as the bench coach. Obviously not a very good first year as expected with a depleted Royals team. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see what they could do in year two. I mean, even the nice young players that they had, like even Nicky Lopez got traded to the Braves. You mentioned MJ Melendez. I mean, when we saw him, when we were working with the Rays, he was playing the outfield. Vinny Pascantino's going to come back, but that guy just screams he wants to, you know, get traded to a big market city, even though I like the guy. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Kansas City's just not a desirable destination for me in order to build around Bobby Witt like these some of these other teams that have rebuilt and won. Even Baltimore. I mean, small little city, nice ballpark, great run franchise, history. Like, even Baltimore to some people could be a good destination. But I just don't see it in Kansas City right now.
Yeah, and to their credit, they have a young, I don't want to say core, because I don't know if it's a core yet, but guys like Nick Prado, 24 years old, Michael Massey, 25 years old, Kyle Isbell, 26 years old, Vinny Pasquantino, 25. They got Drew Waters, I believe last year in a midseason trade. He's 24. So they have a young surrounding group, I guess. If it's because, like I said, it's not a young core yet, because we haven't seen them stay healthy and put together a good season, because they've lost 100 games 2 years in a row. So it'll be interesting to see if they can take those next steps. Maybe they trade Pasquantino away for more veteran leadership and try to say, okay, we're going to try to get, but not veterans in like 30, 35-year-olds, but more like 28, 29-year-old guys that are in their prime that still have some team control that can try to help them win a little quicker, especially with Salvador Perez being 33 years old. So, I mean, to your point, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what road the Royals try to go. And they have Matt Cotchero, who in his first year was kind of underwater a little bit with the roster the way it was and the pitching staff that he had. But I think he's a good guy to help them navigate this rebuild. It's just going to be interesting to see how long this rebuild takes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what the timeline is. I mean, with some teams, like even when the Yankees, when they did that little mini rebuild, I mean, we thought that it was going to be, you know, obviously they made the playoffs a lot faster. But we thought, okay, 2017 will not be the year. 2018 will be close. And then 2019, they'll compete. So I don't know what the heck they're doing in terms of rebuild. It might take 5 to 7 years for them to turn it around, just because I just don't think they're... Their prospect pool, like I said, I've seen it, just doesn't scream to me like it's something special. You know, like you can't really name that many guys in the system that you could say, oh, snap, like this guy's going to be a stud, you know, in 6 months' time. Like a lot of these other systems have. Like you look at other systems and you have prospects lined up ready to go right away in the big leagues. The Royals just don't have that right now.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at their pitching rotation too. We mentioned Zach Greinke had a 5.6 ERA, was 2-15 in 27 starts. And then you have Brady Singer, who took a major step backwards from his 2021 season and his 2022 season, really. He had a 5.5 ERA. And then Jordan Lyles, I believe, led the league in losses with 17, went 6-17 with a 6.2 ERA. And that was the guy that made the most starts for you. Now, you did get Cole Reagans in the Aroldis Chapman trade from Texas, and he was good for you, 5-2 in 12 starts with a 2.6 ERA. But you're talking about a pitching staff that Jordan Lyles is 32. He's going to be 33 this year. Zach Greinke is going to be 20, or is going to be 40, because he was 39 last year. And now you have Brady Singer, who you hope just is better than what he was last year, because he took a major step back last year and regressed a lot from what other people thought he was going to do. If I can look up real quick. The year before, in 2022, he was 10-5 with a 3.23 ERA in 24 starts. This year, a full 2.2 runs worse per nine. So that's just that is not going to help that rebuild any go any faster.
And I think you might be able to agree with me on this, but this might honestly be the last time—not the last time, the only time—we talk about the Kansas City Royals during the 2024 baseball season. So we're not an anti-Royals podcast, obviously. But, I mean, it's just not not a lot of juice to be talking about the KC Royals, maybe until the end of the year, but maybe they could surprise us. Who knows? But, you know, I just, if you had to characterize the Royals organization in one word, I would say confused, because we don't know what the heck they're doing.
They remind me of the Rockies.
They remind you of the Rockies.
Can you name anybody on that team right now? I think I can name two guys.
On the Rockies?
On the Rockies.
Chris Bryant.
Maybe three. Oh, okay, maybe four now for me.
Chris Bryant. Charlie Blackman still around.
That was one of my four.
This is very difficult. I'm out. Go ahead.
I got Brendan Rodgers.
Okay.
I can't even think of his first name anymore, but McMahon, who's the first baseman.
Oh, Ryan McMahon.
Okay. Ryan McMahon. Brendan Rodgers, Ryan McMahon, Charlie Blackman. I didn't even know if he was still on the team or not. Herman Marquez is still there, but I only remember him because he was with the Rays for a little bit. And I think Kyle Freeland is still there.
Okay.
And the only reason I remember Kyle Freeland is because he pitched for Team USA and I went to go see them play in the WBC. So other than that, I don't think I can name another Rocky. And some of those names probably aren't going to be there in the next 2 to 3 years.
Oh, for sure. I mean, the Rockies. I mean, does Chris Bryant even play games for the Rockies? I mean, he seems like he's always hurt.
Might be Anthony Rendon and ask him for less time, less games. Which, did we talk about that the last podcast? I don't think we did. I think it was during last week, and I wanted to get your take on. He said they need to shorten the season. Now, they used to play, you know, back in the day, way, way, way back in the day, 152 games. Now it's 162 and 182 days. Are you on board with the shortening the season? Because I think I think the season's kind of good where it's at.
Get healthy. I don't know what else to say. There's no defending the guy here. Just get healthy. Like, it's 162 games. We all know, like, you enter baseball knowing that it's going to be a grind at any level. I mean, minor leagues, major leagues, even college baseball. We all know it's a grind, man. Like, everyone else is dealing with the same thing. So, you know, that's why there's 162 games, too, is because you get something called an off day when you're playing really well, and they reward you with an off day. But when you're not playing well, you're making a lot of money, and then you're being a sore little loser because you're hurt all the time and the Angels stink. I mean, there's no defending the guy. I'm sorry. Get healthy. Get better. That's the best advice I could give to people who complain. It's just, okay, what are you going to do? Get better.
And I do think, like, this is a guy that played before he went to Anaheim, 153 games, 156, 147, 136, 146. Even in the 60-game season in 2020, he played 52. But then since then, he has yet to play over 58 games from 2021 to 2023. And he's hit a total of 13 home runs.
So I got a question to ask you. So obviously, I'm a big hockey guy. And there's a few teams that we all, me and my hockey buddies, say, oh, players go to die if they go to play in Ottawa or go to play in Buffalo. Is Anaheim the place in Major League Baseball where players go to die?
I mean, recently it has been.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about the early 2000s and even into, like, the early 2010s. I think the last time they made the postseason was 2009. When they went to the ALCS against the Yankees, was that the last time they made the postseason?
That's the last time they won a playoff game. The last time they made the playoffs was 2014 when they got swept by the Royals in the
DS. Before 2014, though.
Oh.
Like when they were constantly winning the AL West and making the postseason. Because I know 2007, 2008, they didn't make the championship.
You're right. It was 2009.
2007 and 2009, they made the championship series, losing to the Red Sox and the Yankees in those 2 years.
It was 2009.
But they had some good teams back then. You got Gary Anderson, you had Troy Gloss, you had Troy Percival at the back end of the bullpen. But yeah, I mean, you think about the talent that they had between 2011 and 2018, before Ohtani got there, you had Mike Trout, you had Albert Pujols, you had CJ Wilson, you had Josh Hamilton. I mean, so it wasn't for a lack of trying to get these guys to come to Anaheim and win ball games, because that's never been the issue. It's just that a lot of these contracts are bad. Pujols' contract, hindsight, was bad after the first season. It was terrible. CJ Wilson's contract was terrible from the start. Josh Hamilton just never produced like he did in Texas, and they even traded him back to Texas, and he became Josh Hamilton again all of a sudden. So yeah, it's just, and then who else? Rendon obviously hasn't been good in the last 3 years. From 2021 to 2023, he's played a total of 148 games.
Yikes.
That's 49 games on average. And even then, if you look at that as being a full season, it's been a terrible full season. 13 home runs, 80 RBIs, batting .235 with an OPS of .701, and his OPS plus is 94, which means he's a below average player, for guys that don't know what OPS plus is. Or late, amazing. Listening to this.
You know, it's amazing. Remember 2019 offseason, the Nationals had to pick one of Rendon or Strasburg. Yeah. I mean, they would have went wrong with either.
Yeah. I mean, they did go wrong. They went wrong with Strasburg. And then they went wrong. Well, obviously, they went right with not paying Rendon. Right. But yeah, I mean, that was the, after they won the World Series, it was okay. It was the same situation that the Phillies found themselves in this year with Hoskins and Nola. Like, who are you going to keep? Are you going to keep your first baseman and put Harper back in the outfield? Or are you going to keep your number two starter and say goodbye to Hoskins, which is what they did. They kept Nola for seven more years. Hoskins ends up signing with the Brewers, which I hope he has, you know, a really good bounce back year after tearing his ACL, because that was terrible in spring training to see that. But, I mean, it's the same situation, you know. And it's basically, it's kind of the same situation that the Angels were in this year. But they already kept Trout because they had him under contract, and they let Ohtani go. Which, that's a whole other discussion that we can have about how Trout kind of sabotaged his own career staying in L.A. But, I mean, yeah, to answer your question, I think L.A. is now Anaheim, I should say, because they're not even in Los Angeles.
It's not L.A. Anaheim. Anyone who actually thinks Anaheim's in L.A. is a fraud. It's not L.A. I've been there.
Isn't it like 40 minutes outside of L.A.?
It's about 30, 40 minutes outside L.A. By the way, I just want to put this out there. L.A. is the most overrated city in the country. I'm just going to put that out there right now. But yeah, Anaheim is an actual name of a city. So you can't – they're not Los Angeles.
You tell us a slow work week when we're talking about L.A. and Anaheim being terrible cities.
Well, no, I just think – well, Anaheim's cool. They got Disneyland. But Anaheim's not – Disneyland's not in L.A. Disneyland's in Anaheim. You know, L.A. is overrated.
The Angels need to go back to being the Anaheim Angels, and they need to go back to having the A with the wing on the side of it. Like how it was in Angels in the outfield.
Yeah, we do a complete rebrand of the Angels, and maybe they'll start winning some ball games.
Oh, dude, automatically go to the World Series, like in 2002.
Exactly. Think about how many teams have rebranded and have had success. I mean, the Houston Astros switched leagues. And started making the playoffs. So, I mean, come on now.
I mean, there was talks about the Rays switching leagues and going to the NL East.
Yeah.
And being with the Marlins. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe with some expansion, because teams are talking about going to either Portland, Nashville, or Salt Lake City. Those are the three major cities that at least I've heard about possible expansion, especially with the A's now going to Vegas, which we could talk about how the mayor's basically just said, like, stay in Oakland, figure out a way to fix that stadium, because now the renderings or the thought process behind the stadium, where they want to put it with the Tropicana location, is not going to work. So now that's a whole big debacle. But either way, I wouldn't be surprised to see some conference realignment, or not conference realignment, but some, like, you know, league realignment, division realignment. Maybe you go to more of what hockey does now instead of having the three different divisions like hockey used to have. They kind of have two separate divisions in each conference. So I wouldn't be surprised if MLB does more of that, where they do an East a Central and a West, especially because like teams like Texas and Houston being in the West is like
they're not the West. They're in middle of America.
You're basically the Central.
Their time zone is Central time zone.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if if baseball goes down, especially if they add a team from Nashville, because you have to add, you're going to have to add two teams because you can't have 31 teams. You're going to have two. So it's going to be like maybe Nashville and Salt Lake City. So you take Nashville, you put them in the Central. You take Salt Lake, you put them in the West. And then maybe you keep Texas. You put Texas in – which one's further east? Texas or – Dallas or Houston?
Dallas, Arlington is further west than Houston.
It's further west. Yes. So Houston would go to the Central. You can keep Texas in the West and keep it like that. But we could talk about expansion a little bit later when there's actually more talks. Which I think that would be cool to have to, because in our lifetime you were born in what, 2000, right?
2000, yes.
I was born in 98. They had already expanded and had the Rays and the Diamondbacks in. So I think it'd be cool to see how that expansion goes, because we've seen it with hockey. We've seen it with the Vegas Golden Knights, and we've seen how well that's worked out. Football hasn't done that yet. Basketball hasn't done that yet, but it would be
–
it with Seattle too.
They just had an outdoor game in Seattle, the Kraken.
Yeah. So – and we see, you know, they're trying to get basketball back in Seattle. So if you can get to Nashville to where they go crazy for their Titans, they go crazy for, you know, their Volunteers and everything in Tennessee football –
and the Preds.
Like that.
So, I mean, that's a cool little sports town when the teams are good.
So I think Nashville will be one of those cities that is up and coming. And then Utah is a little weird just because you don't think of baseball when you think of Salt Lake City. You barely think of basketball.
You don't even think of sports when you think of Salt Lake City.
Yeah. So I don't know if Salt Lake is the right way to go. I know they were talking about maybe like San Jose too in California, but I don't know.
They're talking about
how that would work.
Charlotte as well, you know, North Carolina. I think, like, you know, there's, as someone who has lived in the area for a long time, it's just such a rich college sports state that, you know, I mean, they've been begging for a pro team for so long. I think it would work. But you also got to look at the attendance at some of these games too. I mean, nobody goes to Carolina Panthers games. They stink. Nobody goes to Hornets games. They stink too. Canes games, they play in Raleigh. They love their Duke, their UNC, and NC State already in that area. They would never put a pro baseball team in that city. So it would be Charlotte, in my opinion. Like, I really do. But I don't know how the fans would react to it. I think the fans there want it, but is there enough? You know, are there – do a million people live in Charlotte? 10 million people live in Charlotte? I don't know. Not really. So, but I think you do need a middle ground, because everyone in North Carolina is a Braves fan, pretty much. And that's like a 6-hour drive.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it makes sense. But again, realignment. But MLB, I do know, is not thinking about expansion until 2030. So we're going to be here a while talking about it. But yeah, those are some interesting cities. Nashville, Charlotte, Salt Lake City, you know, San Jose, even, I think, would be interesting, because, I mean, when the Sharks play well, they sell out that building every night. So,
yeah, I mean, they're probably not going to talk about expansion until the A's get dealt with.
Yes.
Whether that is actually moving to Vegas now, or if they get something settled with Oakland and they stay in Oakland, which I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's just a big ploy of the mayor saying, hey, we're going to build the stadium my way. We're going to put it where I want to put it. And if you want to come to Vegas, you're going to do it under my terms. But I don't think they're staying in Oakland, especially the way they've I can't even think of the owner's name anymore.
Fisher.
Fisher, thank you. I wanted to say Moyer for some reason. Especially the way Fisher's dealt with the Oakland fans and all of that nonsense that has happened the last couple of years. I think they kind of burnt that bridge with Oakland. And they're moving somewhere, whether that's Vegas, whether that's Utah, they're moving out of Oakland.
Yeah, put them in Montreal.
Oh my God, could you imagine they move all the way across the country? You got to start learning French.
Or you could just
move. They still have the.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, they still have the Olympic Stadium there.
Exactly.
Stadium it's Olympia. A dump.
I've actually, fun fact, I've taken a tour of that stadium back in 2014. Was it 2014? 14 or 15, I don't remember. But, dude, that was like a scene out of a movie. Like, literally, like, the whole floor is concrete. And then, like, you just see the little dirt patches where all the bases were and stuff. And then, like, the ballpark is massive. All the seats in different sections are in different colors. It's like, obviously, like, you've been to the Trop. But that was literally, like, because we've only seen the Expos, like, in movies, you know. Or, like, something, like, in the past in, like, the 90s. So, like, going there was crazy.
Yeah, I went there. I went there in September, and it was there was pools inside.
No,
for the winter they had heated pools for Olympic sized pools for people to swim in. So it wasn't even a baseball stadium.
Interesting, interesting. But yeah, I will say I'll add to the baseball, so the MLB side of it before we switch over to college. I mean, we had those free agent cards that we made for you about like what a couple months ago, right before we had Steve Carney on the podcast, and yeah. Josh Hader and Ohtani are still literally the only ones that have been signed. I don't even know where mine went. It's kind of surprising that Matt Chapman, Cody Bellinger are not with the team right now. So, yeah, slow offseason. It's not over yet, obviously, but, you know, pitchers and catchers are starting to report. Obviously, once football season ended last night, all the Twitter's like, oh, baseball's back, whoop-de-doo. But still a lot of free agents to be signed.
Yeah, you know what's funny is I have my fantasy football draft cheat sheets that I made. Oh, hey, look at that. Hold on. I'm going to put the mic down. I found it. Look at this. So Blake Snell hasn't gone anywhere, Matt Chapman hasn't gone anywhere, and Cody Bellinger hasn't gone anywhere. That's where we stand right now.
Yeah, the Snell one's interesting because, like, other than, like, idiot Yankee fans putting out fake offers out there, there really hasn't been any chatter about Blake Snell at all. Like, at least with Bellinger, it's like, okay, like, if last resort, like, he's probably going to go back to the Cubs. Nobody has talked about Matt Chapman either. So it's kind of bizarre.
Yeah, I don't know. This has been a weird off season. Like this has been a really quiet, really weird off season, especially with a free agent class as loaded as this one was. Even just like top heavy free agent class with Ohtani, Hader, Bellinger, Snell. Soto wasn't in the free agent class. He still has 1 year left. Stroman was a free agent. I'm trying to think of another big name that signed this offseason. Kimbrel, kind of a big name. Not really, though, anymore. But yeah, this has just been a really weird and quiet offseason to where we've been struggling to figure out during our little like pre-show meetings like what to talk about.
Yeah.
Because like, there's been nothing. Absolutely nothing. That's why we had to have... But that's why I wanted to have Steve Carney and Neil Solons on, because we can at least talk to them about, you know, whatever it is we did during the winter meetings in December. We can talk to Carney about the winter meetings and Ohtani signed at that point or was about to sign at that point. You know, with Neil, we could talk about the Rays moves because I think they had just traded Glass now for Pepiot and Laduca. So, I mean, other than a Luke Raley getting traded from the Rays, they haven't done a whole lot to where we can talk about, or at least I can sit up here and talk about it. I mean, they just extended Kevin Cash and Eric Neander for 5 years, but
yeah, that's about
other than it. That, man, it's been a really bad off season for content creators. I think
terrible off season, absolutely terrible. But there is content to create in another baseball league, that is the NCAA college baseball, starting up this week. Very excited. Peter, by the way, shout out Peter, on the call, USF Louisville, Saturday. What is that, ESPN Plus?
It will be ESPN Plus. I will not be on ESPN Plus, though, I don't think.
Oh, you're doing the radio side?
I'll just be doing the radio side, yeah.
Quality.
This face does not look good on TV. So
no, come on.
Definitely have a better voice for radio than I do face for TV.
So,
But now I know you were talking about some of the games that you were interested to see. One of the games that I'm interested in, I think I can kind of steal your thunder a little bit and steal your segment. Louisville and Indiana State kick off Friday at 12 o'clock. You got a team that hosted a Super Regional against a team in Louisville who finished six games over 500 last year. I'll get their actual record here. They were 31 and 24, so excuse me, seven games over 500. But in conference play last year, 10 and 20. Didn't even make the ACC conference and obviously didn't make the NCAA conference. So this is a team that I think is going to bounce back. They had a pretty decent recruiting class this year in the ACC. And then Indiana State, I'll be actually interested to see how they follow up their super regional appearance and hosting of a super regional into this season coming up. So go ahead, Harris. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good one. I think Louisville, I mean, has been super irrelevant in college baseball since they hosted the ACC tournament back in 2021. And the only reason they hosted is because at that time, you know, COVID, they had to have it at a team site. So Louisville happened to be that team that hosted. But some other just top 25 matchups that I'm looking at, and I think this one's going to be really important for our good friends in Buies Creek at Campbell University, as they host number 17, UC Santa Barbara. Now, Campbell's not in the top 25. They were in the top 25, in fact, top 15 last year. They finished in the top 15. I think they got as high as 9 in the nation last year. Some sites even had them at number 7, but they're not in the top 25 at all. They moved conferences to the CAA when Northeastern's picked to win as their number 23. This is kind of a prove-it year for Campbell. I mean, you know, I got to see a lot of Big South baseball over the last 4 years. The Big South is not a very good baseball conference, so Campbell was just blowing teams out of the water the last couple of years. So this is really going to be the test. So they host number 17, UC Santa Barbara. That game's at 5 o'clock in Buies Creek. NC State, we just heard last week, is going to be without their Friday night guy. Matt Willardson went down due to injury. So now both UNC and NC State are down their Friday guys. So now the ACC conference kind of becomes open a little bit. Obviously, Wake Forest is a juggernaut. Duke's pretty good. But maybe this is an opportunity for Louisville to, you know, do something. But back to NC State. Willardson led the Wolfpack last year in innings pitched and starts. So their Friday guy's down. They're ranked number 13. They host VCU at the Doak. What else do we have here? Two teams that got knocked out in the regional. Number 18, Coastal Carolina hosts George Mason. That game's at 4 o'clock. And the Deacs host Fordham at 5 o'clock on Friday. So obviously the Deacs really excited about number one team in the country. And then I'll give you another top 25 that we're looking at. Patrick Mahomes' alma mater. Texas Tech comes in at number 21, and they go up against number 9, Tennessee. That game's at 8 o'clock, and they're playing that game at Globe Life Field. Now, I had a conversation with a couple friends the other day, and I love Tennessee's offense. Now, I know everyone's going to say, oh, they lost Chase Burns to Wake Forest in the transfer portal, but guess what? Their offense was the weakness last year, why they weren't able to, you know, beat an LSU in the College World Series. This team's loaded now. Billy Amick comes in, transfer from Clemson. You still have Blake Burke at first base. You got Cannon Peebles. You know, this is a Tennessee offense that I legitimately think resembles that 2021 team that had Drew Gilbert and Jordan Beck on that roster. Complement that with, you know, some, you know, they still have a couple of good starters. I mean, most notably Drew Beam. He'll be their number one guy, obviously. He went 9-4 last year. And obviously, Tony V's got something up his sleeve. I think he's one of the best skippers in all of college baseball. So Tennessee, I think, is going to be kind of a sleeper team this year in terms of, you know, teams that are expected to fall off but will probably stay on. So I'm intrigued by that matchup. But it'll be a fun Friday, as it always is.
Yeah, and then a couple other big matchups, too. I guess you can kind of call them big. Oregon-Oklahoma playing in the Shiner's Children College Showdown on Friday, a team that made a regional. I believe, did Oregon... Oregon hosted a super, didn't they, last year?
They did. Yes, yeah.
They hosted a super because they played Oral Roberts.
Yep.
In that super. And then you have Oklahoma, who's always been really good in the Big 12. Seton Hall, Iowa. I'm just curious about Iowa. We were talking about that pregame, too. The wide receiver for Iowa is the number, what is he? He's ranked
fourth. He's the number four.
Pitcher. 5-2 last year with 77 innings. I mean, 109 Ks in those 77 innings is pretty good. and an opponent batting average of 143, Brody Breck, which he's going to get a lot more attention being the pitcher for Iowa than he will the wide receiver for Iowa, considering that I think Iowa had the worst offense in all of college baseball this year. So it'll be interesting to see how he starts his season. And then Butler, Florida State. It seems like Butler always plays Florida State to begin the year, but top five recruiting class in the ACC, top five transfer class in the ACC for Florida State. And I mean, I've said it on here a bunch of times. That's the team that I root for as far as colleges go. So it would be nice to see them kick off the season with a win. And then there's some other games on here. FGCU, TCU. FGCU, I believe, had a top five recruiting class in their conference. TCU's ranked number five. And then Oklahoma State, Sam Houston, a couple of teams that went to the NCAA tournament last year. But you mentioned a couple of guys and a couple of teams that have players in the top 20 of NCAA's list that they brought out with the pitchers. As far as top pitchers, we talked about Brody Breck, UC Santa Barbara, Matt Ager, 5-4. He's probably going to be the Friday night starter for them, so he's probably going to have that first game of the season. You talked about Drew Beam a little bit, and then you also talked about NC State, Dominic Fritton, who went 3-4 last year. Didn't get a whole lot of starts. He had 9 starts out of his 17 appearances, but he's probably going to have to step up into that Friday night role, or at least that number one role. But, I mean, a team that we can always talk about, Wake Forest, they have 3 guys in the top 10. Josh Hartle, Michael Massey, and Chase Burns. And, I mean, you've been raving about Michael Massey, I think, since we've started this podcast. And he's the number 8th-ranked pitcher on here. This is starting pitchers. This is not relievers. So I'm gonna resort to you because you're our Wake Forest expert. He only made 1 start last year. Are they looking to turn him into a starter this year?
Yeah. So he didn't start. He was basically the setup guy to Cam Manassi last year. I mean, this guy was coming out of the bullpen throwing, 99, 100 miles an hour. They sent him to the USA Development Center in Cary, North Carolina this summer. So he did play some summer ball where they lengthened him out a little bit as a starter. His outings were, they increased his outings innings wise. He started at 3 innings and then would go 4, 5 and eventually 6. So this is a guy they want to be a starter, and as they should. Same thing with Chase Burns. I mean, Chase Burns wasn't really a starter. He was coming especially out of the bullpen tournament. A lot. Yeah, in the tournament, he was especially coming out of the bullpen tournament. A lot. So this will be kind of, I think Wake Forest, a lot of guys are like, they got guys in their starting rotation who are going to throw 100 miles an hour and just going to blow everyone away. And that's probably true, but we've never seen these guys start the college level just yet, So I'm excited to see it. I mean, I have no issue with Chase Burns. I'm sure he will be a phenomenal starter. I'm sure Massey will be a phenomenal starter as well, just because of Velo. And we've seen with Velo, I mean, Paul Skeens is example number one. I think it's going to take a couple weeks, right? But Josh Hartle's the guy. Josh Hartle, I think, is just – he will be a first-round pick this year, especially coming from the left side. Lengthy, doesn't throw as hard, but he's crafty. He still strikes hitters out at a very high rate, especially in that ballpark too. We talk about how small that ballpark is. Deeks only lost 2 games at home last year. It is very hard to limit offenses in that stadium. You have Josh Hartle throwing, as well as he did last year into this year. I mean, the Deeks are just, I think they're primed for another amazing year. So we'll see how Hartle does on Friday night against Fordham.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about strikeouts. Hartle had 140 and 102 innings. Massey had 76 and his 41. And then Chase Burns had 114 and 72 innings. So, and these guys also don't walk a whole lot of guys. In 72 innings, Burns only walked 22. He had 114 strikeouts, 22 walks. Hartle walked 24 guys in 102 innings. And then Massey, a little bit more compared to his innings, 41 innings, 16 walks, but not only are they limiting walks and have a low opponent batting average, but they're also striking out a whole lot of guys. And this, we could very well see a starting rotation, at least in my opinion, with Hartle and Burns, the way 2019 Vanderbilt was with Leiter and Rocker. I mean, that's how good these top 2 guys can be. And then Massey, if he can turn into a really good 3, That's a hard weekend series to try to get at least a win, whether you're at home or on the road.
If you remember this too, when the Deacs got into the NCAA tournament regionals and super regionals, their number two last year wasn't even starting games. Sean Sullivan was coming out of the bullpen, which will probably be one of those two guys, Massey and Burns, coming out of the pen by time regionals come around. I don't want to think ahead of myself here, but that's just how they operate. I mean, they still have good options in the midweek too. I mean, if you remember, the guy who opened regional and super regional starting was Seth Keener, and he wasn't even their midweek starter last year. So I mean, the depth that this team has is immaculate when it comes to guys on the mound. They got a lot of guys who are going to be asked to play bigger roles this year, who didn't really get a chance to pitch a lot because of just the studs that the Deacs already had. So like a lefty like Crawford Wade, I'll be intrigued to see. He kind of had limited action last year, but he's a guy who could probably step into a bigger role for this team this year. And yeah, I mean, the Deacs are a wagon, man. As long as they got Nicky Nukes hitting homers, and I'm excited to see how the Seaver King plays, a transfer from Wingate. I'm just excited to see what they do. I hope I can get down there and make it out to a game at the couch, because they're just a fun club. They do it right.
Yeah, so baseball season starts Friday. NCAA, that is. A couple other, rounding out the top 25 teams that are in action. Tennessee, Texas Tech, you talked about that a little bit. Number 16, Texas, hosts San Diego. Number 22, UCLA, hosts Gonzaga. Number 23, Northeastern, which I believe, if I look really quick, I think they had a guy in the top 20. They did not. I think they had an All-American, though, right?
Yeah, Mike Sirota was a third-team All-American. Right. He's a Golden Spikes. He's on the watch list for the Golden Spikes. I mean, I saw him play a couple years ago when Northeastern came into High Point. I think I mentioned this on the last podcast. I mean, this dude, if he stays healthy, I mean, he's legit. He could be a top 2-3 round guy coming in to this year's draft. He was drafted by the Dodgers out of high school, elected to go to college, obviously. But yeah, good player, really good player.
And then number 24, Kansas State, goes to California, or at least they're the road team in the MLB Desert Invitational. I'm sure that game is going to be played in Phoenix. And then just a couple other powerhouse, mid-major teams in action. Santa Clara is going to Arizona State. Long Beach State hosts Washington. Cal Poly and Missouri face each other on Friday. And then a team that hasn't been talked about in good terms the last couple of years since winning the national championship, and that's Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Ole Miss is playing Hawaii 11:30 p.m. on a Friday. So they're going to Hawaii to play that game. And we just have not talked about them in a couple of years, and that's an SEC program that just like Mississippi State, I think, made a deal with some otherworldly figure to win the national championship, because both of those programs, since they've won the national championship, have been terrible, have not even made the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and even last year, Ole Miss still had some really good players from that championship team, but just, they haven't had it. I will be watching Ole Miss, though. Because next weekend, not this upcoming weekend, next weekend, they host the High Point Panthers for a nice little series. So I'll be watching them. But yeah, they kind of had a little fall from grace there. Also, it doesn't help when LSU's got Skeens going every Friday, and he's just throttling guys in the SEC. So yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at Ole Miss's roster right now, and I don't really see many familiar names on this current roster. So yeah, it seems to be a little bit of a different look this year.
Yeah, so I mean, I think the SEC is going to be good regardless too, because even though Tennessee lost Burns, I think they'll be right up there. LSU still has a good offense around that pitching staff. With Thatcher Hurd and Holman. So the SEC will be interesting. Alabama. We didn't really talk about, I don't think we talked about Alabama and what happened last year with the gambling.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that did come out recently.
Controversy. Do I still have the pictures of what was said? Let's see. I'm efforting. Talks amongst yourselves.
Maybe Brody, maybe Bohannon should have bet on the Super Bowl instead of, you know, his own baseball team and pulling Luke Holman. I bet you Luke Holman transferred because he had, like, you know, the PTSD of him getting yanked from a start and was like, I don't want to have this happen to me again.
Yeah, so I do not have... I don't have it anymore. And I think it's going to take a little too long to look for it. But basically, Bohannon sent information to his friend or whoever it was in relationship to him. And the guy was like, you know, trust me, I have a good feeling about this. Like, take all $10,000 and put it on LSU to win. And so they flagged it because $10,000 on an LSU-Alabama, you know, Friday night in March is just weird.
Yeah.
When it's not football. Like, if it was football, it'd be
if
like,
you're
okay.
You're betting college baseball on a random Friday night. I think there's just something seriously wrong with you.
So, anyways, it was basically the better ousted Bohannon, and it was just bad. Yeah. But yeah, Thatcher Hurd and Holman both on the list for top 20 starters. Also had guys like Carter Holton of Vanderbilt, Ben Hess of Alabama, a couple of guys that made minimal starts last year in innings. Cole Klecker made the list from TCU. We saw him in the tournament last year. He's number 19. Who else? Dominic Fritton, we talked about at NC State.
I will point out LeBaron one name.
Johnson of Texas.
Yeah, I want to point out one name. Jonathan Santucci at Duke. I mean, he had a terrible injury that cost him a lot of his season last year. He only made 7 starts, but this is a stud. I mean, lefty from Duke, you know, was tops in the nation in strikeouts and whip in 2022. This is the driver of that rotation. I mean, just imagine if Santucci was available for Duke last year. I mean, that's a Duke team that made a super regional. They could have went to the College World Series if they had Santucci on their active roster last year. So that was a tough blow for them. I'm excited to see him. I mean, I saw him when Duke played High Point. I think he struck out like 17 guys, you know, in the game that he pitched. I mean, he was unbelievable. So I'm excited to see him back.
Apparently, everybody just needs to play High Point, and they have, you know.
I mean, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. Year. I love my boys, but I mean, you know, I did mention Sirota against High Point, but the game that Sirota went off, High Point did end up winning that game and won that series. So I'll say that. Support my fellas.
So, but that's the start of baseball season. USF plays UConn Friday at 6:00. That's on Bulls Unlimited. I think I have to go there to get my credential. I might just stick around and watch.
Why the heck not?
USF baseball. They have their shortstop coming back. Preseason All-American. He was an All-American first team for the AAC. Still learning a couple of names from USF, so bear with me if I just call him a shortstop or a pitcher or whatnot. I have to actually do some game notes tonight for Louisville. And then they play Indiana State. So two teams that made a tournament, and then Louisville, who's looking to get back for USF. So anybody interested in listening to those games, TuneIn app, Bulls Unlimited, or you can just watch on ESPN Plus. So apparently there's a rally towel giveaway for the first 500 fans of that game against Louisville.
Book your plane tickets and go to the game, 4:00 Saturday.
Or you can get a Carry the Boat t-shirt on Friday against UConn.
Book your tickets. Let's rock.
But other than that, no other news to announce. Clayton Kershaw's coming back for his 17th and probably final season with the Dodgers. I don't think after this year, after you get Walker Buehler and Bobby Miller back from injury, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of rotation space. And then you're also going to get Ohtani back next year. I think we could be seeing the last season of Kershaw on the mound for a Dodger, in at least the Dodgers uniform. So
enjoy
other than that,
it while you
though,
can.
Other than that, we're still waiting on names like Cody Bellinger, Blake Snell, and Matt Chapman to sign somewhere. I mean, Harris has just been a slow offseason.
Terrible. Been absolutely terrible. But now we don't have to deal with Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, and we can watch some baseball.
Yeah, and I mean, at least we'll have some college baseball to talk about, even if there's no MLB baseball to talk about. Pitchers and catchers report on Valentine's Day, which is Wednesday, the 14th, also the 15th. A couple other teams.
Most overrated holiday on planet Earth. That's right.
So other than that, I think that's going to do it for the young lads here. Harris, you got anything to add?
No, I'm just good luck on the call Saturday. Excited for college baseball. We'll see who becomes the next Tommy White on Friday. If those who don't remember 2022 NC State Tommy White, he hit three homers in his first ever college baseball game. But I'm excited. Happy baseball season, everybody. You know,
Tommy Tanks doing it for LSU this year.
That's right.
No Trey Morgan, no Dylan Cruz for LSU, but I predict offense is still going to be humming along there in Baton Rouge.
100%.
You'll have Paul Skeens and Livy Dunn being at your games.
I mean, can that get much better?
I mean, I can think of a couple other guys that I'd rather have there than, you know, Livy Dunn, but
it's so amazing how she's become like this national phenomenon. I mean, I was at work the other day, and there was an NBA game on at 3:00, and they were like, no, let's watch Livy Dunn do her routine on ESPN instead. I'm like, what the hell are we doing here? You know?
What the hell are we doing here, between us? I think it's time to end the podcast.
Just absurd.
About gymnastics on a baseball podcast and
bad.
Livy Dunn. And,
yeah.
I mean, she had a great floor routine, though. Or uneven bars.
I don't even know what that means.
I think she won. It's just basically
you
have
one bar. Oh,
is that
the one where they're flipping around and they catch the bars and stuff?
Yeah.
That's actually
but
cool. That's pretty
one's higher than the other, so they're called uneven bars.
No, that makes sense.
Great, great routine. We'll talk about it more in depth next podcast.
Yeah, fantastic.
On our gymnastics podcast. But I think that's going to do it for us. And that actually is going to do it for us. For Harris Eisenberg, I'm Peter DeFeo Jr. saying so long. Thank you for listening. This will be uploaded later today on Monday, February 12th. It is currently 3:12 p.m. as we're talking right now. So look forward to talking to you again next week.